God Killer Peace and Death is an actual play of Divine Tragedy, made using the game God Killer First Blood by Connie Chang. General content warnings include discussions surrounding death, grief and loss, fantasy violence, imperialism, war, religious themes, and deicide. A full list of cast and crew, as well as other relevant links, can be found in the show notes. Viewer discretion is advised.
In her 26 years of life, Orchid Lullaby had never known the meaning of death. How could she? For her entire lifetime, death has been missing from the world. It was not until the sudden end of Jareth Turner, a mere 2 days ago, that she was forced to confront this painful fact of nature, that one day, the people who you know, the people who you love, will have to leave you. Orchid has never been one to sit idle. They are a being of action, and so with the threat of death looming overhead, they began the journey to entreat her patron deity, Tritus. The god of abundance and scarcity, known as the life giver and the great balancer, Tritus must certainly have the power to hold death at bay, at least for a little while. As the rickety wagon wheels creak and rattle on the old dirt roads, you remember the last thing your mother said before falling into a deep sleep. I thought she came back. 2 days of travel is a great deal of time to ponder what those words could mean. What do you think she meant, Orchid?
I think as I've been traveling, those words bouncing around my head, I still only have the faintest idea of what my mom meant. The first thing that came to mind was my mother, my other mother. I've never met her. I've heard stories of her, obviously, from my mom and her sweetness, her gentleness. Every time I saw my mom talk about her, I could see the way her eyes would light up without moving, how her movements became graceful, like a dance almost. A dance that should have a partner, but a dance she had to do alone. But it couldn't be her, because she's gone now. So, I don't know.
You ponder that absence that you've been vaguely aware of since you were a child. Chrysanthemum always took wonderful care of you, and you were never alone. Jareth was like an uncle. Tara was like a grandmother. It's not that you've been without love. It's just that you know that there is someone else who loved you, who was not there. And you know your mother was always looking, waiting, hoping that person might come back one day, even if she refused to say those words out loud. And in the quiet of the back of the wagon, you're forced to consider what it could mean for her to come back. But thankfully, you have something to free you from your own thoughts. Because the dirt road becomes gravel and then cobblestone as you approach the temple city, Trita. This is the capital of the realm you call home, the domain of the god of abundance. You can see the temple before you see any other buildings. The spire that is formed from twisting interconnected trees raises above any other forest in the land. The entire temple built from the raised roots of massive 1,000-year-old growth, perhaps older. And the city of Trita is... It would be misleading to say it is a city of plenty. There are merchants and traders and travelers. Certainly anything you want, you could acquire in Trita. Yet there is also an expectation that the people of this domain practice moderation, practice self-sacrifice. And so while you can see from your wagon dozens of merchants and traders with fine silk from distant lands, with fruit that you've never even seen before, bizarre colors and shapes, with beasts of burden from far-off lands, you can't help but feel deep in your bones, this is not for you. This is all for Tritus. The wagon draws to a stop. One of Hayden's cousins jumps down, walks around the wagon to help you out. She says, this is as far as I go. I'll wait here for you, and when you're ready to head back, well, just let me know.
All right. Thanks for the ride. I appreciate it. I say as I hop out, start stretching a bit. The long ride has made me stiff as I really start taking in just how much is here and finding myself almost overwhelmed by its abundance. Like, okay, where am I going? I know I'm looking for the temple. Where is the temple in all of this? Then I guess once I am sure, I head towards it.
You make your way through the crowded streets. Once you make it past the bustling market, things get a little bit quieter for a bit. In the neighborhoods where children play in the streets, you notice there's something in the air, something that feels at once alien and familiar. Would you like to feel out this place?
Yes, I would love to. So that's 2d6.
Well, no, you don't roll for this.
Oh, still getting used to this game.
I know, you're so excited to roll dice.
Excited to roll dice. Okay, so I will say what clarity I would like and answer one. I guess I really only have heard stories of Tritus and this city. Like when I was much younger and would ask my mom if we could. It was the kind of thing that she seemed very vehemently against, implicitly, if not explicitly. Just always a place where she would say it would be best to avoid, or no real reason to go there. So because of that, I don't really know much about Tritus other than what little we would speak about them, about the fasting, the desire for balance between having and not. And so I guess being here and finally seeing the place that the Temple City is, I guess the thing I want clarity about is what kind of ruler is Tritus? And I will say what feels dark or unnerving when I peer deeper here is that as I look around at all these people and all these things and the grandeur of this place and the understanding that this is not for me, it is for Tritus, I also get the feeling it's not for the other people here either. That all these people living in this city, amassing wealth I could only imagine, that all this work, all of this energy and time and devotion does not truly benefit them in any way. Only Tritus.
So is that your answer? What feels dark or unnerving?
That all of the people here live lives for Tritus rather than themselves.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think you even notice as you look around, things that you've taken for granted your whole life are different here. As you look at the children playing and the parents who are watching them from porches and from stoops, no one has that sun-worn, wrinkled skin. Even the older folks here, everyone seems like their skin is smooth, and you notice makeup on a lot of them, and their shoes all look new and polished, like there's no wear on them. None of their clothes are patched or torn. These are people who live in relative luxury compared to the life that you know, compared to Brookshire. But they are still neighbors who care for one another, who support one another. You see a young boy, maybe a teenager, carrying a heavy basket for an older woman. You see a child in a garden with their mother planting seeds. Despite everything, the thing that you have in common with these people is that in order to survive living in Tritus's domain, you must support each other, because otherwise, what does that make you? What are you if you only live for the devotion of this god, if you are not giving of yourself and your time to people you love? As you walk through these streets and these neighborhoods, you see care and you see love until you reach the temple square. And then very abruptly, there is a shift. The priests, who you recognize by their golden adornments, don't have any love or care in their eyes, at least not for you. They watch you approach the temple with thinly veiled scorn and disdain. They wonder what kind of peasant dare to track mud into the holy domain of their lord. They don't stop you as you take the stairs into the temple of Tritus. In the main hall, you see a massive cornucopia, nearly a story high from the opening of the horn to the tip. And within it, you see all of those fine silk, all of those strange fruit. You see pieces of the beasts of burden who have been slaughtered and prepared, placed all around a single human skull. And you watch as attendants file in, placing more and more and more tribute into the horn. What do you want to do?
Oof. I get the feeling that looking around, I don't really see anyone who I should, like, address, right? I've never come to see a god before. And with no evidence of presence of Tritus here, and no one who seems to be a receiver of any sorts, I'm gonna make my way to the cornucopia. I'll wait my turn in line until, you know, I make it to the front. And in absence of truly having anything to give in this moment, I didn't think to bring tribute. I mean, I don't even know if there are manners to follow. No one has ever told me. So I just call out, Lord Tritus, your grace, I come from the town of Brookshire. Forgive me, I do not have tribute for you, as I didn't know to bring one. I come with a plea, a request, as we need help. 2 days ago, a man in our village, he died. And well, I guess, I have come to seek your aid, my lord.
When you start speaking, the entire temple goes silent, as if stunned by your audacity. Once again, no one stops you. They watch and listen. When you say that a man has died, you hear a quiet murmur ripple throughout the priests and the attendants. There is a moment of confusion before you hear a voice ring out. It is a quiet voice, but it fills the entire room somehow. It is both as if it is being projected through a horn and as if it is being whispered softly to you. And it just says, bring her to me. A priest with a gold band around his wrist, approaches you and says, "The Lord will grace you with an audience."
Thank you.
You follow this priest through hallways decorated with gold and tapestry. You follow them past pelts of strange and endangered creatures, trophies mounted on walls. It's a twisting, confusing place. The walls themselves are grown from the roots of the trees, and so it doesn't seem to follow any architecture that has been planned. So it is a confusing, twisting trip upstairs, down hallways, past more wealth, until you enter a grand hall, the kind of thing you see in storybooks, where kings would summon their knights and lords to feast. You see table after table after table laden with food, and smells of roast animals, of pepper and spice and sweet honey cakes. You are assaulted on all sides with opulence. Only one person is eating, a single priest seated alone. And every time he takes a bite, every time he picks a fruit, within a moment, it is replaced by yet more food as he continues eating. And at the head of the great hall is a man in a long white toga, his skin like cream and honey, his hair like woven gold. He looks at you with eyes green like a deep, deep pool reflecting the leaves of the trees overhead. He looks at you and you feel the weight of his eyes. And you hear that whisper in your ear that fills the entire room. "Did you say that a man died?"
"Yes. His name was Jareth Turner. He was my friend's father."
"How did it happen?"
He was working out on the farm, like, you know, he always did, and worked himself to exhaustion, which isn't uncommon, on the account of the fasting and all. The way I heard it, he passed out and never woke up again. And I saw him myself. He was so pale. No breathing, no heartbeat, nothing.
For the briefest of moments, for an impossibly short second, you see this man, who you know must be a god, smile. You see his lips part and his teeth so shining and white, smiling so widely it looks like his face might split, like it must pain him. But then a moment later, it is gone. His face serene and placid.
"So what is your request, child?"
"Well, Lord Tritus, I was hoping if people are going to start dying soon, I mean, we don't know why. It's only going to start happening more if people are working as hard as they are and not able to eat, Lord Tritus. So I was wondering if, I mean, even just for a couple of weeks, a month or so, allow us to start figuring this out. I mean, perhaps your priests, your scholars, whatever you may have here in Trita can help figure out why this might be happening and give us a little time to figure it out, or I'm afraid everyone's going to start dropping."
There is a heavy silence as your request lingers in the air. Barely a request, honestly. more of just a thought that you tossed out in the hopes that perhaps it would be interpreted graciously. You can almost see it hanging on a scale in the air before you hear the single word.
No.
No?
You may be too young to know this, but mortals were made to die. That's all you do.
But Lord Tritus, I mean, that might be true, but it hadn't been true for a long time, and we've been operating under the notion that no one ever could or would again. And so your rules around fasting made sense then. But now it's just going to get more people killed, and if more people get killed, there won't be anyone in Brookshire left, or frankly, possibly anywhere.
You know, for all those years that you mayflies got a taste of immortality, you forgot the meaning of want. You forgot the meaning of need. I think it's good that you're getting a reminder.
Hey everybody, it's me, Kendrick or Kendo, whichever you prefer, your host and creator of Tales Yet Told. Just wanted to pop in once again to thank you for listening to God Killer, Peace and Death. It feels nice to be back in a different headspace with this series, something more grounded and measured in the dread that it builds, rather than the absurdity of the sublime. I only hope that you all are ready to stand beside Orchid for the long haul, regardless of where that journey takes her. But before we return to see what Tritus has to say with our God Killer yet awakened, let's do some housekeeping. Consider following us on social media at Tales Yet Told on Instagram, Tumblr, and Threads, at talesyettold.com on Blue Sky, and you can always check out our website at talesyettold.com. If you want to keep up with the show and everything else we have planned in the future, these are the best ways to do so. Also, it would mean the world for us to hear about what you think about the show, including your general thoughts, any theories you may have, or, well, anything, to let us know what you enjoy about us, if you enjoy anything about us at all. And you can let us know in a variety of ways, be it tagging us on social media, leaving a review or comment on the podcatcher of your choice, or, even better, telling a friend to check us out as well. We all know that we're more likely to try a show if a friend that we trust recommends it to us. So technically, you have more power than I to convince people that Tales Yet Told is an actual play channel worth listening to. And with great power comes great responsibility. Sorry, I've just been playing a lot of Masks lately, so I think that's just kind of the mood I'm in. But lastly, if you're looking to freshen up your wardrobe as well as supporting independent artists, you can grab some of our merch at merchyetsold.shop. And if it helps you get into the door, I'll sweeten the deal. Get 10% off your order if you use the promo code ORCHID when you check out. Now, with all of that out of the way, I've got just a few more ads and teasers to drop. So stick around and hear more about another God Killer series coming from our friends over at Game Master Monday. And between you and me, I think they're going to knock it out of the park.
I mean, he has the entire power to do whatever he wants to do. It's in his hands.
I think that is where we may have a bit of a miscommunication. It's not in his hands. It's in my, our hands, how this season goes.
But doesn't it make a good story for someone who's never won to actually win for once?
That's so cheesy. Gosh. Nobody wants a story like that. It's so tired. That's what a 30, 40-year-old dad shows to their kids and expects them to be grateful. No. Ugh.
Folks, it is a beautiful spring day here in Louisville, Kentucky. The sun is shining, the breeze is cool, the blood rain has finally passed, and it is baseball season.
How far away do you think greatness is?
They love to see old guys like you finally get it every once in a while, but this is the shit they live for.
I see it of two ways. You can sit here, take your punishment, keep your head down. What if you did something different?
I'm not a chess piece this season. I'm gonna try and make a baseball move.
God Killer Home Run, the next mini-series from Game Master Monday, premieres August 24th wherever you enjoy podcasts. Starring Brad Zillman, Sadie Pasley, Ian Grant, Shadow Sylvia, Mags Curry, and Kenny Chilton as your God Killer. Using the God Killer system by Connie Chong with additional mechanics from Ball Game by Finch Edmund. On August 24th, Batter Up.
Hi, my name is Robin.
And my name is Dylan.
Do you like Choices Matter video games?
If so, we started this podcast, Dorkspawn, so that I could show my best friend my favorite RPG series of all time, Dragon Age.
And now that I've played it, we want to share more of these choice-heavy games with each other.
Right now, Robin is showing me Mass Effect, which I have never played before.
And we are going to continue playing through these games together and discussing them book club style as we go.
You can join our Discord and play along with us, and tune into Dorkspawn every Friday wherever you listen to podcasts.
Sound is an amazing thing, don't you think? It can guide the listener in subtle ways, drawing them into the story it tells, changing the mood, evoking an emotion, foreshadowing doom. There's a reason why we spend so much time here on Tales Yet Told, designing the soundscape of our story. But now you can do the same with Pocket Bard. Pocket Bard is a free audio app that helps game masters weave immersive sound into their games, with ready-to-use scenes, ambiances, and sound effects that you can transition through seamlessly with the touch of a button. And starting on June 27th, Pocket Bard is moving from your pocket to your PC with a new desktop app for Windows and Mac. Download Pocket Bard today and bring the power of immersive sound to your table. Boots the same color or jacket and... Oh, hey! Didn't hear you come in. I was just designing one of my characters in Hero Forge. What's Hero Forge, you ask? Hero Forge is an online character creator that gives you the power to turn your imagination into reality. Hero Forge offers full customizable tabletop miniatures with dozens of fantasy species and thousands of parts to choose from, like hairstyles, clothing options, and equipment. And after you're done designing your hero, you can have them made in a variety of materials, including bronze, color plastic, or even a color standee if that's your vibe. Then get it sent straight to your door, all from within your browser. But if you're a DIY kind of person, then Hero Forge also offers downloadable model files so that you can 3D print your design at home. Just head on over to heroforge.com to start designing your custom miniature today. And check back often, because new content is added every week. Now, can you get out of here? I gotta finish making this Eagle Man. This episode of Tales Yet Told is brought to you by the folks over at MythWorks with their newest Kickstarter, the Wild Sea Sourdough. In the Wild Sea, you will set sail upon the Verdant Sea, an ocean of forest canopies full of lost world artifacts, treacherous pirates, and world-bending whispers. But the pale tides of the Sourdough are far harsher than the eaves you may be used to. This brand new supplement for the award-winning TTRPG introduces you to the White Woods of the Sourdough, the ancestral home of the sentient hive-minded spider colonies known as the Trellicrae. The Wild Sea Sourdough features three new factions, four new background options, and new ship options to prepare you for an adventure you may just barely survive. The Kickstarter is live as we speak, so go back now before it's too late. And I'll see you on the Wild Sea.
I think it's good that you're getting a reminder.
I think there's like just completely baffled by this. The lack of care or empathy or anything that feels human from Tritus.
And I think it's in this moment that you realize just how true that is. Tritus is not human. Tritus is not a man. Tritus is a god. Tritus has no empathy for you, has no care for you. You, in this moment, perhaps aren't even sure why Tritus keeps any of you around.
As I stand there looking at him, I think there is something building in Orchid that they have not really known ever, or at least not for a long time. There's just like this red hot warmth building from her belly and spreading through the rest of her that she can only really feel in the tension in her muscles as her fists squeeze in on themselves. My lord, I'm sorry. So you're not going to do anything? You're going to just stand there and watch us die? Watch everyone die around you?
No, I didn't say that. I'm just not going to do what you want me to do.
Then what are you going to do, my lord, if I may ask?
For the briefest second, you swear you see that smile again, that impossible, grotesque smile, before it's gone again. And Tritus stands from his throne, strolls leisurely around the hall. He picks up this palm-sized purple fruit, tosses it from one hand to another, then drops it onto the ground. As it falls, it turns from a perfectly ripe purple to a sickly, rotten black, and it hits the floor with a splat.
I think I'm going to remind you mayflies what it means to want.
As I watch this happen, watching as the fruit drops, changing, rotting as it falls before splatting, I think in this moment I may recognize a god, truly.
Okay, now you can roll 2d6. You are in Tritus's domain. You're in his temple.
Mm-hmm.
You are, I'd say, quite familiar with his gospel.
Yeah.
And it would be very bad if you didn't recognize the signs of what's happening.
Okay. Then rolling 2d6. So plus 3. That's an 11.
Oh, that's an overkill.
Yeah. Well, that can't be good.
So you feel something welling up within you. This heat, this feeling so unfamiliar that you might not even name as anger. But as this rage boils up within you, Tritus feels it. And for the first time, looks at you as if you really exist. Tritus makes eye contact with you, begins crossing the room, and says, "Who are you?"
"My name is Orchid Lullaby, from the town of Brookshire, my lord."
"Brookshire. Oh, yeah, that nothing little village. You know, your town was so insignificant that no matter how much I starved you or denied you, it was never enough. Everyone was just so lacking in ambition."
"How close is he to me?"
"I'd say about arm's reach."
I grab him by the scruff and I punch him in his face. Or I'm going to try it.
I would like to roll 2d6 to inflict violence.
okay. Do they wish me harm?
Not really. Not personally.
Okay. Am I desperate? I don't know if I'm desperate. I'm just mad. It's definitely personal. It's 100% personal.
Okay.
So I guess just plus one. That's 4 and a 2 plus 1, so 7.
Okay, this part of the fight ends on your terms, so...
Let's go!
You punch a god in the face. Tell me how that feels.
Oh, it feels so good. I don't think Orchid has ever punched anyone before. It's not that she couldn't handle herself in a fight. More like, she has no experience fighting. She just has experience working, so she's strong and sturdy, but she's never had to really fight anyone before. And so the first punch in 26 years, I don't think Orchid ever realized how cathartic it feels to inflict violence upon something that is troubling you. She doesn't hold on to him after the punch. It's very much like a pull close, full follow through across the jaw and like letting him fall back. And it hurts. It hurts them for sure. I don't think it's like a perfect punch either, right? It's like she's never done it before, so she doesn't know how to exactly ball her hands in a way that doesn't hurt her knuckle once it makes contact. And so it's very much the full follow through the, fuck.
Yeah.
And like holding the hand, like I've never had that feeling before.
Take one strain as your fist just starts like throbbing. Because I think normally punching a person hurts, especially if you don't know how to do it.
Yeah, it does.
It feels like you just punched, maybe not stone, wood. It feels like you just punched a tree.
Mm-hmm.
I think Tritus is so surprised he does stagger back half a step. And then he starts laughing. This booming, deep laugh that fills the room. All right. You want to play this game? Then why don't we play this game?
This ain't no game.
He grabs the front of your shirt and fully lifts you off of your feet, like a foot into the air, holding you in one hand.
You are just like every other little mayfly from that dirt pit. For the tiniest moment, I thought you were something else, but clearly I misjudged.
And he's gonna throw you through a window.
You know what? That's fair. I punched him.
Do you want to do anything about that?
I think as he is holding me there, there isn't like just like a holding out and then like a wrist tossed right. I'm imagining like a full like...
Oh yeah, there's a full wind up.
Yeah, the wind up of like having to pull back. And I think I raise my arm so that when he pulls back, it's at throat level. I'm going to try to grab him by the throat and just full force, like try to push my way towards the ground to bring him down with me.
Okay. This still sounds like you're trying to inflict violence.
Oh, yeah. No, I think that's the only thing Orchid knows how to do in this moment.
Okay. He does wish you harm.
Yeah, no, that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
I think I am desperate in this moment because it's either this or I'm going through a window. And it still feels pretty personal. So, plus 3, which last time wasn't great for me. Okay, 5 plus 1 is 6, plus 3 is 9.
That's a hit. So, yeah, as Tritus throws you, you manage to grab hold of him. You've never fought someone, like, in anger, but you've probably, like, wrestled. You've probably, like, tussled.
Yeah, probably some play wrestling when I was a kid.
Yeah, and you know, a body has a certain weight to it. Even somebody big, even somebody strong, the human body has a certain weight, certain center of gravity. When you grab Tritus, it doesn't feel like you are grabbing a person. It feels like you are trying to uproot a tree. And this motion doesn't go as smoothly as you imagine it going, but you hold on to him just enough you don't go flying. And as your nails rake over his skin, the skin peels back, and underneath it, there's like the green that you see when you score a tree with your knife. You are going to take another strain as you both end up tumbling a little unceremoniously.
Mm-hmm.
And then he is back on his feet.
I think my only experience doing any of this is wrestling when I was a kid. And so I think that's immediately the thing I know to do. I'm going to try to rush him and get him on the ground and grapple him.
He's not going to let you do that. I think at this point, it is clear that there is something about you. When you got angry, there was a brief moment where he felt fear. And the fact that you are still trying to fight him, that feeling of fear, it's still just below the surface, undercutting his actions. So he's not going to stand and fight you. He jumps. He leaps up into the rafters of the hall and takes this sprawling, lounging pose in the branches of the tree that forms this temple. I think I'm getting bored of you. Why don't we see what you're really about? He's gonna use his power on you. What is it that Orchid really desires in this moment? Obviously, you came here to beseech Tritus to help your town, to help the people, to give them time to breathe and to eat and take care of themselves. That's what you asked for. There's something deeper. What is Orchid's desire?
I guess for clarification, what was my true desire when I came to ask this, or what is my desire in this moment?
Beyond that, beyond what you came to ask for, beyond the rage you feel in this moment, what is the thing that gnaws at Orchid in her day-to-day life, the thing that she doesn't let herself want because she doesn't think it's realistic or because she worries too much about other people?
I'm gonna have to think about this.
Yeah, you can take a moment.
I think there is this spot in the forest just outside of Brookshire. There's this place on a cliff overlooking a decent portion of it where you can see the tops of most of the trees as they are looking back towards Brookshire, seeing it in the distance and seeing it shadowed by the mountain behind it. Really, it's gorgeous, especially at that golden hour as the sun is beginning to set and the sky begins to change colors from blues to vibrant hues of violets and oranges and golds and reds. I think for a long time it had been Orchid's desire, like one day, when I actually have a day off and the fasting candle isn't lit, to have a nice lunch there one day. Just relaxing, walking through the woods, and having a nice lunch overlooking the forest and their town. And I think to a certain degree, they still desire that. Just a day of rest. Just being able to bask in the beauty that does exist in this world.
You find yourself laying out a little blanket on this cliffside just a little bit before sunset. You take your basket and lay out your lunch, all your favorites. You set up a little chair. Your mom sits looking out over this beauty, and you see someone else whose face you can't quite make out, standing just beside her with gentle hands placed on her shoulder. And that voice, that whisper, says, "Oh, how quaint. Picnic with your mommy."
I turn to try to grab at the source of the voice.
There's no one there. It's just you on the cliff with your parents, with your lunch.
Maybe I should pay her a visit and let her know that she's got an impudent little brat and she did a very poor job teaching manners.
Don't you talk about my mom like that.
You don't get to tell me what to do. I've indulged this for a while, but you don't understand how this world works. Gods decide the rules, and you play the game. If you play the game well, you may get rewarded. If you try to break the rules, you will get punished.
Well, I wasn't very good at games.
Orchid, you have thrown yourself headfirst into the belly of the beast, confronting a god in their own temple, trying to fight them, trying to fist fight a god. There is little more dangerous or more foolish that you could do. And that heat, that anger wells up inside you again, but it's something bigger this time. It's like sunlight. It feels like you swallowed the sun. It's burning so hot in your chest. And it feels powerful. And that woman standing beside your mother, whose face you can never quite look at, that you can never quite focus on, her voice cuts through this vision. Her voice cuts through this dream. She says, "Don't let him talk to my daughter that way. Go on, show him what you're made of. Awaken your divinity, Orchid."
I think in that moment, at those words, is the first time that Orchid understands what this warm feeling she's been feeling is. Anger and vengeful rage. She's only like now truly processing how she is feeling. And it is this feeling of, yes, anger, but like it is directed, it is with a purpose and cause. I want to make Tritus see not just me, but everyone else as being relevant. And now with this threat against my mother is when I pull on that anger, that rage, that thirst for vengeance, and I manifest it, and I awaken. Whatever that means.
Mechanically, it means you check off that tick box on your character sheet.
Uh-huh.
And it also means you have access to a specific move, Unleash Your Divinity. If you wish, you can accomplish a single brilliant feat. It will cause your divinity to go dormant again, but you can do one powerful thing. You don't have to do it right away if you don't know what you want to do.
The state of things where, like, my physical body was, if I'm even still there, is that even still relevant, or am I in this scene that Tritus has conjured in my mind?
You are physically in this place, but at the same time, you are physically in the temple. It's not as if your mind has left your body. It's you are both. Both are true at the same time.
Okay. Then with my body in both places, here on this clifftop overlooking the forest in my village, and at the temple, standing at the glass window, looking down to where Tritus has escaped to, I reach down, pick up a rock, a shard of glass at my feet, and using the ability dormant in me, taught to me once by my teacher, Nanali, I take the glass, the rock, and I grab it by its center, glass piercing my flesh, stone against my skin, and I stretch it, and I smooth out its bottom half, making it easier for me to hold without being cut by the glass, and I reel back, and I throw it, the rock into the forest, the glass into Tritus. And I think in the moments before the rock hits the floor of the forest, and the glass pierces Tritus, it splits into four. Four stones hit the floor of the forest. Four shards enter the hands and ankles of Tritus, pinning him to the floor.
As you unleash your divinity, first choose if it is brief, obvious, or unstable.
I think it is obvious. If he jumped down here into the rafters of the temple below, I imagine all of the people who were here before are still here and are watching this happen, and it is plain as day what is happening and who is causing it.
It is going to be plain as day to far, far more than that, but we'll get to that in a little while.
Okay.
I don't know if you knew that's what you were doing, but you take this vision, this illusion, this space days and miles away, and you bridge it to this temple, and you reach through it, and you attack him through dimensions that he can't even perceive, and he doesn't even know what's happened. One moment he is looking down at you from above, and then spears of glass rain down and pin his body to the floor of the temple. These should barely even be able to scratch him, let alone pierce him. But as they burn with the light of your divinity, he struggles. He thrashes. The entire temple shakes as he tries with all of his might to break free. This temple shouldn't even be able to withstand it. The floor should be crumbling beneath you from the force of him, but he is pinned in space. Do you want to kill a god, or do you want to spare a god?
I think in this moment, there is not an ounce of mercy in me. I don't even think it is the thought, the concept of killing. The first person died 2 days ago. I have no concept of this is me killing, but I do know that I am inflicting my pain, anger, and wrath into this person, and there is not a bit of me that is willing to hold any of that back.
You're going to roll 2d6 and do not add anything to it.
That is a 5 and a 2, a 7.
You will slay Tritus. But when you do, you are going to lose something of yourself, something meaningful. So you tell me, as you kill a god, what do you lose?
I think in this moment, watching the death of a god, after only seeing my first person die merely 48 hours ago, I think I lose... Give me a second. Trying to figure out what's the most interesting thing to lose. I think upon witnessing death for a second time, and this time it being inflicted by me, having seen the depravity and callousness of divinity, and having witnessed the pain and suffering of mortality my entire life, I think I lose my smile. I don't know if there's any possibility of joy for me, as divinity has changed me and my perspective has changed me. There's nothing to be happy about here, not in this world, not the way that it is.
As you loom over Tritus, no joy left on your face. As his death looms over him, he laughs. Once again. Fine, fine, whatever the fuck you are, kill me then, but you'll still never get what you want. You can't. I made sure of that generations ago.
What the fuck do you mean?
The only way that little mud pit of a town would be worth anything to me was if it could make enough desire to feed me. So I made sure that no one's desires would be sated, and my death will not break that curse.
I think Orchid How far is the fall from this window up here down to the floor?
Couple stories. Maybe three.
I think I follow the path back down to the ground floor. Those words ringing in my head, passing all of the people who I don't know if they're calling after me. I don't know if they're trying to stop me. I don't know if they know what has happened yet. They are tuned out in my mind, drowned by the white noise of white hot anger. And as I make it back to where I have pinned Tritus, god of abundance and scarcity, down to the ground, I reach down to one of the glass shards that I've used to pin him, and I grab it again by the smooth shaft, and I stretch, extend it, and then break off the part that I've elongated. And with the shaft of glass, I'm just going to stick it right in his throat and watch. I don't know if gods bleed. I don't know what is running through him.
You stab a shard of glass into his throat, and this sap begins to pour out, this like sickly, sticky sap. And as the light fades from his eyes, his skin starts bruising like rotting fruit.
Yeah. And I stand there looking down on him for a time. The people around me panicking, frozen in mixtures of fear and amazement, are still drowned out by this feeling inside of me that I now know is anger. And I leave.
You turn to leave as the priests flee, scream, cry, wail in confusion. That's not your problem. You're going to go home. And as you turn to go home, you feel that weight again. That weight of Tritus's glare on you. But this time, it's different. This time, it's heavier. All at once, you sense four sets of eyes watching you. The weight is enough to stop you in your tracks. You feel burning anger. You feel fear. You feel curiosity. And you feel, from the last set of eyes, you don't feel anything. And then one by one, they look away from you.